Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who knows that everything is bigger in Texas. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and when we are in the Lone Star State, we are 7 feet tall, just like Chris Young.
I was going to say, that is really what they are referring to. Their general managers watching Chris Young have to lean down and hug all of his players. He gave Adolis a bear hug at some point, and Adolis Garcia, not a small person, just kind of disappeared into the bosom of the GM that brought the Texas Rangers their first World Series in franchise history. There is so much to get to.
Clap it up.
Let's clap it up. Jake is sitting in the, as we described, the bowels of Chase Field. I'm sitting in my office. It is 1 a.m. Eastern time. Hopefully, I will not wake up my wife with my clapping. But the Rangers deserve it, Jake, because they did it. They won the World Series in just 5 quick games, completing their undefeated road trip through the postseason, 11-0. We've never seen anything like it. And they're the champs. We are going to recap this World Series Game 5, a fantastic baseball game, at least for 8.5 innings. We are going to give you our immediate feelings and emotions of this Rangers World Series. But on Friday, we will give a little bit of a bigger picture thoughts about what it means for the Rangers to be winning the World Series. But this is just instant reaction. It's late night recording. Jake's got writing to do. We just want to get on here talking to these mics because this baseball season is over and the Rangers are the champs.
Zach Gallen versus Nathan Eovaldi, both of whom can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Now, will they? Probably not, but they could if they wanted to. They also happened to be the starting pitchers tonight in Game 5. Reminder, Game 3 and Game 4, both taken by the Texas Rangers here in the desert. So Arizona needed to win the final 3 to lift the World Series Cup, which is what people call it. They needed to win one to send it back to Texas. And before the game, it was interesting talking to Rangers people. They were like, there's a vibe like this is done. And I don't know if it's done. It was done. But it didn't always seem that way at the beginning of the game because boy, oh boy, was Zach Gallen locked in.
Yes. And while the D-backs' dream Cinderella run has ended, Zach Gallen ended on a tremendous note. We referred to it as a Gallen legacy game in some respects coming into this, and the guy delivered. I mean, he carried a no-hitter deep into the game, and I think that what we saw from him was what we've kind of been waiting to see from Zach Gallen, which was that he was in complete control. The stuff was crisp. The curveball was ridiculous. He was using that just every – that was going exactly where he wanted to throw it for called strikes, for whiffs. Everything about that curveball was sensational. And he was just in, he was in control for the whole, for those first 5 innings. He was doing everything he wanted to do.
This was the Zach Gallen the larger baseball world was promised.
Yeah.
He has looked blah for the better part of the last 3 weeks since the Dodgers series. His last 3 starts were all underwhelming. He was solid. And it was like, is this really like a Cy Young candidate? He's a solid pitcher who goes 5 innings, goes 6 and gives you, you know, a solid start, but he hadn't shown really the high end until tonight. And it was incredibly impressive. If you go scroll through his game day stuff, it's all on the corners. It's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. And the contrast with Eovaldi's start, which had a lot of traffic, and we can get to some of those innings in a second, but now it was matched up with the fact that Texas was again being extremely aggressive, which kept his pitch count exceptionally low in the early going. And so because of that, we saw Zach Gallen, again, he was cruising. And so by the time we're getting into the middle innings, and we'll backtrack a little bit to get to some of the threats that the Diamondbacks had, as we're getting into the middle innings, even as we're going to the third time around and we start having that discussion and start thinking, oh, are they going to leave Gallen in to face Seager and all these guys again? He's at like 65, 70 pitches, and he's rolling. It's as good as he's looked in weeks, if not months. So you can understand why Lavelle was going to leave him in. But let's flip it over to the other side. Because Nathan Eovaldi, on the other hand, while the stuff was there, the sharpness was not. The command was all over the place. He walked 5 batters for the first time in like 10 years or some ridiculous length of time. Like, this is not a guy that is used to losing his command to this degree. And when he walks two in the first inning, you kind of think, you know, even with no run scored, you're just thinking like, oh man, like how long is Eovaldi going to be able to go in this game if he's going to have this much traffic and his pitch count is climbing?
But he was able to work around all those walks. What, he ended up with five, you said?
Yep, five. Mm-hmm.
Nolan Ryan-esque, Jordan. Nobody walked anybody more. And Nate Eovaldi, the guy who was born in Alvin, Texas, the same town as Nolan Ryan, the Ranger great. Very appropriate way for it to go. I'm going to rely on you for the beat-by-beats of this game. I do not have my game day up.
That's fine. I was just
pushed out of the kitchen where I was recording, and I am standing with my computer on a dumpster.
Okay.
And so I'm just going to have you run point on that.
Perfect.
If you don't mind.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, again, it was kind of the same inning over and over. You know, we'd get a leadoff guy, we'd get a walk, we'd get a guy into scoring position, and then he would get out of it. There would be a weak flyout. There would be a hard ground out. You know, we get, I mean, I don't know if anyone gets to third base. I guess we should go, let's go to the bunt. Okay. Let's go to the bunt. Bottom of the third, Carroll leadoff single. Marte walk. It's first and second with nobody out. And Gabriel Moreno, who has not had a great World Series, admittedly, and I'm sure that factored into this decision somewhat, but he's batting third and has been one of their best hitters, of course, this entire month. They decide to bunt with Gabriel Moreno. At least he got the bunt down. I mean, he did do the bunt well. Like, that's something.
Correct.
There's a version of this where it was even more embarrassing, where he bunts and he fails and, he, you know, it's a bunt foul out or whatever. But no, he does get the bunt down to set up Christian Walker and Tommy Pham to hopefully drive a run in with guys on second and third with one out. And instead, Walker strikes out and Pham grounds out. Now, Pham smacked that ball, 114 off the bat for Pham. So again, it's like there was some hard contact too, but the bunt and playing for that one run was kind of a moment of like desperation of needing to get on the board, but also kind of like, hey, let's get one because Zach Gallen's is dealing. Right. But it was also, it was like what that kind of said, going for the bunt there, had pushed their small ball mentality so far to where everyone, for, you know, all month, it was like, oh, this is so great. This is so cute. This is so amazing that they've made it this far. And then suddenly we were all like, what the fuck? They're bunting with their three hitter.
Yeah. But I think Gabby Moreno had very little chance against Eovaldi tonight.
Yeah.
And wasn't like, didn't the final result prove that strategy correct?
Yeah.
Like Gallen was incredible and like all runs mattered in
right.
this game. And
yeah,
I know
totally.
That the Rangers put up a big spot late on, but playing for one run, I don't really have a huge problem with it when your starter is so locked in.
I agree. You know, and I'm not like totally opposed to the bunt, but again, it was like a moment of like, okay, like this is how desperate they were. And then to not get that run in there makes it all the more painful and makes it kind of course, became kind of a full culmination of what we saw from the D-backs offense in this game. But then, you know, Gallen just keeps cruising. Semien, Seager, Carter out, 1-2-3 in the fourth, bottom of the fourth. Longoria doubles, and but then Perdomo strikes out on a just a, that the strikeout to get Perdomo. I know he kind of thought it was absolutely a strike, just picture perfect fastball on the outer half, exactly what I was kind of talking about with his fastball command when it was on. Top of the fifth, we have a very deep fly ball from Josh Jung. This is the first hard contact for Gallen. We got a fly ball from Garver, which was near the wall that Gurriel kind of settles under, and then a deep fly ball to left center, which went 393 feet that Gurriel seemed to
great
have
catch.
It all the way. He calls off Carroll, really nice catch. And then
great reminder that play that left field defense makes a difference.
Yeah,
it
absolutely.
Is the place that we shove the doofiest lead footed. You know, Dumbo, but a lot of balls are hit out there. And
absolutely.
Gurriel being able to run that down in the gap is a big deal. And that is related to Evan Carter.
Especially, that's true. Especially in this next, especially in this ballpark, I was just going to say. But okay, so now we have Nathaniel Lowe up. And Nathaniel Lowe draws a walk. First base runner of the game. Okay. But we're just absolutely cruising at this point. First base runner comes and Nathaniel Lowe walk. But then Jonah Heim strikes out because Zach Gallen is still locked in. We have a couple more base runners for the D-backs in the fifth. Christian Walker and Ketel Marte reach. But then Gurriel grounds out. He gets out of it once again. It is still 0-0 going to the sixth inning. Gallen comes back out again. Tavares, boom, Jankowski, boom, Semien strikes out swinging on a fastball, inner fastball, just blew it right by him, clearly was expecting something else. And that was just like, holy shit, like this is the performance. And even though we're going to the seventh inning, you're just like, this, hell yeah, you're sending it back out there. But Eovaldi, he goes back out for the sixth and goes 1-2-3, including two more strikeouts.
Yeah.
And you're just like, we're now feeling it. Because at this point, as when they're trading zeros in the first three innings, you're like, okay, great, long way to go.
When they're trading zeros in the sixth.
In the sixth, we're like, holy shit, we're watching a classic, right? And that's what it feels that way. Oh, yeah.
Tonight's game was the argument against the bullpen game in many ways.
Yeah.
The narrative excellence and the delicious viewing experience of two Hosses trading Zippos, that's the whole point. Like, that's what we want to see in the playoffs instead of the revolving door.
Yes.
And so not every team has four Eovaldis and four Gallons. I understand that. But that is why these guys are so special.
Yes.
In my mind, and I've said this many times, Jordan, there are two types of pitchers. Those who can start playoff games and those who can't.
And honestly, that's kind of what we've learned, right? Like, we think about, and this is part of the problem, is we need teams to develop more starting pitchers that are the ones that can start playoff games, and the team just don't trust them. Now, again, to be clear, D-backs fans, like, I understand that was your best option, and that's why we had game four, and it sucked, right? It sucked for everybody. But we are mostly talking about just we're the people watching the World Series. We want to enjoy the World Series, and, like, this is the version of the game that is just so much more enjoyable, and that, especially coming off game four. Oh, just so much fun to watch these two go back and forth in very different ways. But here we go. Seventh inning, still 0-0, and Corey Seager, after absolutely smashing baseballs all month long, just an absolute squibber. 67-mile-an-hour exit velo basically beats the shift that is still legal into left field. And we got a leadoff runner. And then Evan Carter.
Well, not only do we have a leadoff runner, isn't that the first hit of the game?
It is the first hit of the game. It is the first hit of the game. Of course it is. Right, so because it was the perfect game, right? So it's not just lead off runners. That's the first hit, which didn't feel like much of a hit, right? Because again, if they weren't shifting him, it's a regular ground out. But instead, it's the first hit of the game. And then here comes Evan Carter, and he's like, oh, that didn't look so hard. Boom. Hits the first badly located curveball, and he struck out on it earlier. Ropes a double on the second pitch from Gallen. And in a blink, right, because it happens really quickly to start that inning, suddenly, we didn't even have time to start, like, thinking about the fact that Gallen was about to go through the order for the third time because, of course he was going to. He was throwing a no-hitter. But then suddenly,
74 pitches or
something? Yeah, yeah. But then he has two hits, and then suddenly everyone on Twitter is like, oh, well, see, third time. It's like, No. Of course he was going to be still out there. Like, no shit he was, right? Like, of course now it gets a little dicey, but, like, absolutely you leave Zach Gallen out there.
And, yes, there is the ghost of Kevin Cash. Right. Mm-hmm. There is the ghost of the 2020 World Series with Blake Snell hovering over that.
Yeah.
But it's not one for one because the Diamondbacks relievers, I don't think like look, I'm the Gink King. I love.
Oh,
Gink.
And he balled out, man.
But is like, what would you rather have? Ryan Thompson or another time of Zach Gallen?
Again, you know what I'd rather have? Score runs. That's my final answer for a lot of the D-backs shortcomings in this game, which we will, of course, get to. Anyway, but it happened so quickly. And they're like, oh, wait, oh, now it may should have been Ginkle, whatever. Okay, Mitch Garver's like, hey, sorry. Boom. Here's the lead. 1-0.
Hey, Jordan.
Yeah.
How do you get from Phoenix to Texas?
How do you
drive? If I were to drive, where would I go?
You would drive right through where Mr. Garver played his collegiate baseball.
You're damn right I would. Right through New Mexico. The road from Chase Field to Globe Life passes right through New Mexico.
Yeah. Which Mitch Garver, he's not from New Mexico like Alex Bregman, right? There's no way.
I don't know.
He is. He's full through and through. Albuquerque, born and raised. Holy shit, I apologize. Forgive me that this man, why would I assume that? But yes, University of New Mexico legend Mitch Garver delivers what at the time was like, oh my God, they scored. Is this game going to be 1-0? Like, that hit really could have gone down as a legendary moment. Not that it doesn't, because every moment in the Rangers finally winning the World Series is a legendary moment. But anyway, He gives them a run. Boom. They leave Gallen in for Young, and he strikes Josh Young out. And that was just, it was great for Gallen to still finish on that note there, because it was like, you know what? He did his job. He did his job. And at that point, when he leaves the game 1-0, I'm thinking, score some goddamn runs for this guy, because wow, what a showing in game 5 of the World Series. Kevin Ginkel comes in, gets out of the inning, as only the Gink does. And now we really start sweating, because now it's like, oh my God, the Rangers are 9 outs away. And how are they going to do it? And oh my God, Aroldis Chapman's coming in.
And Bruce Bochy is like, let me take that difficulty setting and crank it up to 700 and call on Aroldis Chapman. I think Eovaldi might have come back out if they hadn't scored. So your boy has big old binoculars, secret to covering ball. You want to be a ball writer, bring your knocks to the yard, okay?
Yeah.
And I had mine zoomed in for a lot of that inning on the Boch, on Bochy and Maddox.
Oh, on Boch.
Talking. And I did not see Boch go to shake Eovaldi's hand for a lot of that inning, at least for the beginning of it. So I do think Eovaldi might have come back out.
I don't know, man. Based on what, 97 pitches, it looked like I didn't see a handshake, but it seemed like that. But either way, okay, here comes Chapman. And this was at least interesting because I guess we'd seen the order between Spores and Chapman kind of flip-flop a few times during the postseason. But with the lefties coming up, or with Carroll leading off the inning, they go to Chapman. And Carroll swings at the second pitch, which was not a strike. 1-0. And you slacked this to me, or some variation of this. Basically, swinging at anything Chapman is throwing you before he has thrown a strike should be punishable by just terrible. And Corbin Carroll, I love you. You're amazing. You're going to be a 10-time All-Star. You could be one of the greatest players in franchise history. All of those things are true. Rookie of the Year, blah, blah, blah.
Can't have it.
It's just not the guy. Not the guy to do it.
Should be if Brian Abreu got 2 games for hitting Adolis, Corbin Carroll should get 20 games for swinging at an Aroldis
Chapman. Corbin Carroll should not be allowed to play for the first 10 spring training.
Not acceptable. It's not acceptable. If my little leaguers would stand up there, I'd be like, boys,
they would get
swinging
at least the ball. They would get at least, they would draw a couple balls. As evidenced by the immediate 4-pitch walk to Ketel Marte that follows.
And you're it's just like, not worth swinging. It's just not worth it. Like, even in baseball, as a whole, a take is worth more than a swing. Okay, the value of a take is higher than the value of a swing. It's Aroldis Chapman. The value of a take is 5x the value. Yeah,
not even close. But then he kind of locks back in, and Moreno just kind of looks overwhelmed, just swinging at heaters, 101, top of the zone, 2 outs, and then Christian Walker. But then, of course, because Aroldis Chapman hasn't finished an inning in weeks, still gets pulled for Christian Walker here, and Spores comes in to begin his legendary outing. Christian Walker lines up, and we go to the eighth. And in the eighth, not really anything happened. I guess in the eighth, we have not much. It's just Ginkel kind of not sharp, but like the slider's still good enough, so we get through it. Him getting out of that mess felt like, again, it's 1-0, right? So we're feeling it. When Ginkel gets out of his own mess, you're like, oh my God, here we go. Let's score some runs here. We got Tommy Pham coming up. But Spores says, nope, that is not going to happen. Strikes out Pham, gets Gurriel to ground out. Alec Thomas singles, and then Pavin Smith pinch hits for the fourth time. But for the first time, he actually got to hit. And here we have two teammates from the University of Virginia Cavaliers who raised the College World Series National Championship trophy in 2015 together when Pavin Smith was a freshman and Josh Spores was a junior. They were like 10 big leaguers on that team. But here they are, teammates, former teammates, facing off. And Josh Spores just throws just about the nastiest curveball on the outside corner. Like, listen, because of the names involved, you know, it's not quite Adam Wainwright and Carlos Beltran. But as far as aesthetics go, it's pretty fucking nasty.
And like, believe it or not, like, Ron DeSantis was back there watching it.
Right. Yeah. And so this is we have just the perfect. I mean, literally just the perfect curveball.
You could not
draw up a better pitch. So
flip ahead to the top of the ninth, because that is where the dam breaks. Actually, you know what? One more quick thing on Ginkle. The video of, or the clip of him running off the mound, like getting hype and pumping the crowd up after he finishes a scoreless top of the eighth. I thought he was going to grab a helmet and a bat and just go.
He was like, my turn. You my scrubs turn. Can't hit. Like, I'll take some hacks. I was like, please. Like, I'll take anything at this point.
The gink right. abides.
Top of the ninth. It's time for Paul Sewald to pitch. This is the most solemn version of that I have ever said. Here comes Paul Sewald, because I mean, listen, you just got five outs out of Ginkle. Like, this is who they were going to go to. Like, it's not,
yep.
Of course, duh, right?
Yep.
And they're not waiting around, and he throws a 91 mile an hour fastball right down the middle.
Jordan,
and Josh,
Jordan, we have a special guest.
Oh,
we
special
have a special guest. Say hello.
Let's oh go. My goodness. Look at that. Jared Sandler has joined the show. Jared, what's so up, dude? Are you feeling good?
He says, are you feeling good, Jared?
Jordan, this is I can't even describe how awesome I feel. I smell terribly, and I'm so sorry, Jake, that you're gonna smell like alcohol. This is amazing. The Rangers just won the World Series.
So you grew up in the Dallas area. What is your first memory of Rangers baseball?
I went to a game at what was then the ballpark in Arlington, ultimately ended as Globe Life Park. Kevin Gross started for the Rangers. I don't remember who started for the Cleveland then Indians. I'm allowed to say it because that's what their name was then. And I remember Albert Bell hit a double and Carlos Baerga hit a home run, and the Rangers lost by a lot of runs. But I grew up, can I tell you something in all seriousness, what's really cool? And standing over there, my broadcast partners, Matt Hicks and Eric Nadell, I am here because of Eric. I grew up going to sleep listening to Eric, and he has meant so much to Rangers fans. And the heartbreak of 2011, I think, sat with so many people, especially Eric. And I'm so happy that he had this moment here tonight to call the final out of a Rangers World Series. And I'm so happy for Rangers fans to be able to experience this. This is unbelievable. I'm sure I'm going to go home and cry.
Crying in baseball is a good thing. Thank you. Thank you all for your coverage of the Rangers all season. And for you folks, more than this season, that's for freaking sure. Keep it easy, everybody. Let's finish up the wrap up here, because at the top of the ninth.
He just spoiled it. The Rangers win?
He just spoiled it. Oh, yeah. Spoilers. The Rangers won.
Damn.
Oh, man.
That's Jared Sandler, everybody.
Now people are going to delete all this from their TiVo.
Josh Jung jumps on a first pitch from Paul Sewald. Nathaniel Lowe follows on a third pitch. And here comes Jonah Heim with runners on first and second and nobody out. And remember, it is 1-0. It is still 1-0. And even when you get the first two guys on, we are sweating this out. It is like these last few innings were as tense as you can get. Jonah Heim lines one to center field. On the first pitch, again, Paul Sewald has thrown five pitches. Okay. And suddenly the ball goes into center field. We know one run scoring for sure. And I'm just like, oh my God. Because again, when it's 1-0, it's like, oh, 2's going to feel like 20 because the D-backs can't score. So even the single, even when the ball lands in center field, I'm like, game over. And then
the ghost of Yoenis Cespedes
floats down. It reminded me more of Trent Grisham.
And just boops Alec Thomas right on the head. The baseball rolls just under his glove and all the way to the wall. Two runs score. Jonah Heim ends up on third. And that is curtains. Yeah. But if you needed total darkness, a couple batters later, Marcus Semien finished the job.
Truly says goodnight. Marcus Semien in his 835th plate appearance of the season,
the most
of all time, if by a single player in a single baseball season. He played in all 179 games that the Rangers played. Playoffs and regular season combined. And in his final one, he said, as you said, curtains. It's not just curtains. We're turning the lights out. Goodbye.
He's like, yeah, I'm going to make sure this is my last plate appearance.
Yeah. And that was it. he hits a home run. He, like Corey Seager, looks way more excited than he ever has hitting a home run. And it's 5-0. And now we are just counting down. And Josh Spores comes back out for the ninth because with a 5-run lead and because he has been their best reliever the whole postseason and because they did not want to use Jose Leclerc for a third day in a row and they did not have to, they said, hey, Josh Spores, go take us home and take them home. He did. Strikes out Perdomo. Carroll pops out and gets Marte on a not quite as nasty, but still pretty nasty curveball looking. And that is it. Your Texas Rangers are the 2023 World Series champions for the first time. First time ever. They did. They're the last team. They did it. They won. And holy shit. That was an unbelievable run. It was an unbelievable game. This World Series was great. This postseason was great. But I mean, I'm just glad that like this game delivered. You know, for how much we wanted to dunk on game four, I will remember this game for a very long time.
I think the quality of the final game of a series is important in remembering the series. This was solid. It was a solid game.
Yeah.
It was entertaining. It was compelling. It had ebbs. It had flows. I wish the Diamondbacks could have scored a run. That would have maybe been cool. But besides that, it was pretty spectacular. And before we go to break and talk about this from a bigger picture, I want to just touch on what Jared just ran on and said.
Sure.
Because the Texas Rangers and the city of Dallas and Texas as a whole means nothing to me and to you, right? It has no connection to us. We grew up in D.C. We did not grow up going to see Rangers games. We had not been to the, you have not been to the new stadium. We both went to the old stadium once. But to see what baseball means to a place, right? To see the hold that it has on people, the tight grasp that it can, that like just the meaning of it, right? Like to see someone like Jared, who has been around this team all year, who has grown up watching this club with tears in his eyes, like that's what it's about, right? And even though you and I and a lot of this country cannot relate to that because we don't care, I put that in air quotes, about the Texas Rangers, it's important to remember that some people do. And that baseball matters to places and the people who live in them.
100%. Let's take a quick break. And when we return, we will do some more big picture thoughts before we say goodbye.
Hey everyone, producer Chris here with a brand new housekeeping note about our merch. Basically, we have a bunch of new stuff. So if you've been looking for a baseball barbercast themed beanie or bucket hat, or even a t-shirt with one of those cool pockets on the chest, well, you can stop looking and start buying because they are all available right now, just in time for winter. Just go to podswag.com/baseball and don't leave yourself clothesless this winter. That's podswag.com/baseball.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast, Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. I'm Jake Mintz. He's Jordan Schusterman.
Hey.
Let's go down onto the field, where I am currently not. And by a dumpster in
you're
a hallway,
closer than I am.
that is true. Me being here allows me to get a perspective of what it is like to, you know, I get to touch the celebration. I get to smell it. I get to be in the champagne room and all that bullshit. And you pick up all these little moments and vignettes that are very special. Along the way, they get blurred into one another.
Sure.
And so it's hard to kind of pick them out, but I will do my best to take you, the listeners, there.
Sure. Yeah. And of course, you know, obviously for the World Series in particular, they do a pretty good job. If you watch on the Fox broadcast, like you're in there, you get a good amount of shot for it. But as you said, like you're seeing a lot more, and having done it once in 2021, like I remember, especially being on the field afterwards and just seeing the families and seeing how many different people and friends and like former college coaches, and just like you realize how many people are there for these players and how many different, you're just the whole span of the roster and coaches and just like parts of the organization that you're not necessarily thinking about. And you, that's really where you start to see which teammates are especially close and, you know, which guys have been through it the longest and whatnot. So I am curious about that. I mean, the reality of this Rangers roster is most of the guys haven't been there very long, right? I mean, it's not like there's too many guys where you can look around and be like, wow, like we've been through this. Honestly, the one guy who I really wanted to see, which I didn't see at any point, was Leclerc, who didn't end up pitching in this game. I didn't see him in any of this. So I'm sure he was there, whatever. Saw a lot of Adolis. Of course, Max looks like he's having a great time. But as far as the players where it's like, oh, the connection to the team is maybe not quite the same because a lot of them are so new, but like the veterans though still hit. Semien, guys that have been had long careers and finally achieved it is really special.
So it's a very interesting dynamic, and acquaintance, friend, colleague, person we know who works for the Rangers asked me after they won tonight, what was my sense of the group? What were my impressions of the team being around them? They are outrageously professional. And that is a very boring thing to say and obviously applies to all 30 teams, all professional. And maybe it was just going from the Phillies to this, not to say the Phillies aren't professional, but like it's a much happy-go-lucky vibe in that room. And this is a very task-oriented group. There is a mercenary vibe, and that's not a bad thing, right? That's what the money's for. Yeah. Did the Rangers buy a championship? Fuck yeah, they did. That's the point. Right? They went out and they spent You're allowed to do that. You're supposed to do that. They spent the money wisely on good players that helped them win baseball games. That is the whole point. And you understood that energy that these guys are not necessarily spending a lot of time away from the field with one another in the way that some of the other teams that, like, I'm sure the Diamondbacks are a lot more like that, right? The Phillies were like that. The Braves were like that. And that's just because this is an older group. And again, not a bad thing. Even the younger players on this team are like particularly seasoned. Josh Young, Evan Carter, you know, they go about the boring tasks of the day of baseball. And the World Series was in some ways just another big, awesome number one task to circle. Now, on the flip side of that, right, you have the raw emotion of the guys who never thought they would be in this position. Robbie Grossman, right? Yeah. Talked to him for a while. He was like, look at all the players who play forever and never get one.
Never get even close. Never get even close.
So those veterans.
100%. John Gray.
The emotion is less about the city.
Yep, the team that you're on.
Franchise, yep. Than it is about how these players together fit within the scope of their own careers.
Does that make sense?
And again, I really want to emphasize, not a bad thing. Rangers fans, you shouldn't give a flying shit about this.
Yeah.
Right? You should be chugging a beer right now and getting ready for the parade. Like, this should not matter to you. The flags fly forever and you get to enjoy it however the heck you want. I'm just trying to paint a picture for people who are maybe trying to determine between different types of teams that win the World Series.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's true because every team kind of has. But again, like, that's the thing. Because there's so many new faces for the last couple of years, and yes, there are players that did go through the lean years relatively not that long ago, like Nathaniel Lowe, like Heim, but it's just not that much time, right? And when you don't have that many homegrown guys, but it's fine because again, it's two different conversations. That's just our observations of the group and how they all got here and what it means to them. It's allowed to mean different things for every player. And the fan conversation is a different thing. And that's what's most important. Think about 2011. Not a single person in that room besides, like, I mean, honestly, like who in that room gives a shit about 2011.
Bingo. And they asked Nathan Eovaldi about this.
Yeah.
Maybe it was Seager in the press conference. Like, what does this mean? Like, did you know that this is the first for the franchise? The ghosts of 2011. And the fact that it meant nothing, I think, helped them overcome it.
Totally. Totally. And it's the same thing with, like, any team that, like, again, this happened with the Mariners too, right? Like, the drought isn't our fault. Like, Julio doesn't give a shit about the drought, right? Like, you have to embrace and say, yeah, this is part of it. We're trying to win the first World Series. But again, shifting it to the fan focus. Earlier today, I spent a lot of time watching 2011 videos.
Me too.
And I didn't want to text my Rangers fan friends, you know, and say, hey, I'm doing this now. I wasn't going to say that. But, like, that truly is, even at the time and still now
the closest The closest.
The worst. The it is the most devastating World Series near miss of our lifetime.
Ever. And they don't have, this franchise does not have the repetitive year over year crushing shit. Like, now, yes, they've never won before.
Yeah.
I get that. And there are other moments of pain. But they have the GOAT awful moment in baseball history.
Yes, which was multiple times. And yes, of course, there's other like Game 7 horrible losses. You know, Cleveland, of course, one comes to
down
mind.
Down to one out. They were down to their last strike twice.
Yes. Yes. And yet Cleveland has a case. But that individual moment and how that game went in Game 6, 2011. And remember, they were there in 2010 too, right? Like, I was in pain watching it this afternoon, knowing that they had a great chance to win tonight. Like, not thinking that they were going to blow it tonight because I watched this team and it has nothing to do with that team. And this team has better, like, amazing players and they were going to win, right? But, like, that was just so much to deal with. And as Jared mentioned earlier, right, like, that is such a real thing that has haunted this team. And this is the other thing about this. 13 years is not, or 12 years is not that long. Right? Yeah. Like, that's the kind of moment that could haunt for decades.
Yep.
And for them to go all to bring it back to this team, for them with this ownership and with Chris Young over the past few years to say, we are not going to stay. We are going to do whatever we can to put ourselves in position to win. Doesn't always work out. But they pushed enough of the right buttons and were aggressive enough and were fully committed to winning their first World Series. That should be the goal of any team that's never won the World Series. And we've seen the Padres do that, right? But to specifically erase what that felt in 2011 is so admirable and so cool that they got that for the fans.
Last moment that I'll remember. Adrian Beltre.
Yes.
Lifting the trophy.
Had you seen him during the series? I guess because he threw out the first pitch.
Yeah, he's been around.
Okay.
He's been around.
So tell me this moment. Because you tweeted the picture and it obviously did very well, but I'm curious about, you know.
Well, first of all, I don't want to sound salty. There's a retweet button. Just going to say that.
No. What's wrong with via Cespedes BBQ? Come on.
There's a retweet button for a reason.
There is a retweet. I don't know. Some accounts, I think, don't have the retweet button.
Oh, maybe that's what Twitter Blue is. Sorry.
They can't find it.
Okay. I'm standing. This is like kind of late. There aren't that many people really. There are a lot of TVs, cameras left on the field, and there's a ton of family, but there aren't. Like, it's kind of towards the end. Mm-hmm. And it's Martin Perez.
That's a guy I'm very happy for.
Okay. I have a video of it. It's Martin Perez handing the trophy to Beltre and kind of egging Beltre on and telling him to hold it and to hold it up. And Beltre says, no, 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 no. He says, it's like basically, you know, not about me. No. And Perez insists and insists and insists. And Beltre relents. And he gets about 10 seconds to hold up the trophy. And it was so cool to see that, man. To see Perez, did he overlap with Beltre?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Oh, they played years together. Yeah. Yeah. But here's the thing. Beltre's last year is 2018. Okay. His first year is 2011. That's the other thing about Beltre's career, which is interesting, right? He is so closely associated with Texas, understandably, right? And he's not there until he's 32,
right?
Because he was so great, right? But 2018 is Beltre's last season. The only guy on that team that's still around is Leclerc and Martin Perez, who has since left and came back, right? Nobody else has left. And so, they were teammates. They were teammates for a while. So that is a great moment. That is one of the rare ones within the celebration of one where that connection to the team means so much to Martin Perez, and him to know how much it means to Beltre also is really, really, really special. So that's an awesome moment. I appreciate the insight into that, because the picture alone, you know, speaks for itself. But that's really, really, really cool. So I love that.
That's it, Jordan.
Okay. Can we do 5 minutes on the Diamondbacks and then we can say goodbye?
Can we do that on Friday?
All right, we'll do that on Friday.
I'm just...
That's fine.
I'm ginked.
You're ginked. Friday's episode, we will spend more time on the snakes.
What a year.
They deserve more time. But for now, we will cut it off. Jake, good luck getting home.
I don't have an ID. I have to write a lot tonight.
Yep. Yep. There's a lot of things have to happen. That's why we're in this editor, podcast.
My editor, don't listen to it. Don't listen to this. Haven't started writing.
Well, he won't be able to hear this until hopefully after you're done. So
true.
Thank you all for listening.
If you work at TSA at Phoenix Airport, shoot me an email.
All right, sweet. BaseballBarberCast@gmail.com, BARBcast. Thank you to Chris Tyler for producing this episode early on Thursday morning for all you fine folks to listen. We appreciate everyone who's enjoyed and listened to the postseason, all postseason pods all month long. The show keeps going. Friday we'll be back. We have all kinds of very exciting stuff lined up for the offseason, obviously. But for now, we will say goodbye. We'll be back on Friday to do some more Big Picture Rangers and D-backs thoughts and start thinking about the offseason. But until then, everyone enjoy the no baseball on Thursday, although that would have been the case anyway. And start watching Winter League, because that's all you got.
Congratulations to the Texas Rangers.
SiriusXM Podcasts.